Hello and welcome to Raising Humans, a podcast from 6 Seconds, the Emotional Intelligence Network. I'm Rachel Ann Goodman. Today on our podcast, Mei Duong interviews Yvonne Constanar, the lead level 3 teacher at Synapse School. That's the school in Menlo Park that 6 Seconds runs and founded to teach emotional intelligence and social-emotional learning alongside project-based learning as well. Mei talks to Yvonne in this podcast about how parents can prepare their children for a day of learning at school. How often have you struggled getting your kids off to school in the morning only to find that the rushing around and the stress has caused them to completely shut down by the time they get to school? Well, it doesn't have to be that way. And Yvonne has been teaching for many, many years in younger grade children. She has some wonderful advice and perspective about how to navigate the emotions and family dynamics to set up your kid for the best learning environment. Here is Raising Humans from 6 Seconds.
Hi, Yvonne.
Hi, Mei.
Thanks for taking the time to do this.
Thank you for asking me.
So I wanted just to start out by asking you, like, when you receive the kids in the morning, when they come in, what are some things that you do that you think could be something that some things that you do, and then some things that maybe parents could do even prior to them coming to school that can really set them up for a good day?
So I'm very much of a believer in establishing routines. Mm-hmm. So whether that's a routine at home in the morning, a routine of getting up at a particular time every day, having breakfast every day at the same time, getting that routine down so that whether it's a backpack that they have to remember or shoes that they have to remember, so that it's almost on autopilot as much as possible. When kids come to school in the morning, kids that come to school a little bit early usually have a way of connecting with their friends before the day starts. They spend a few minutes on the playground, they spend a few minutes in the library, and that helps them to ease into their day. We actually line up outside of our room before we come in. That helps us to calm our engines down, to calm our bodies down. And then we come in quietly, we have a seat at the rug, and we start a routine that way. Mm-hmm. And that gives us an opportunity to either share our EQ number, or if somebody had something very exciting for the weekend that they wanted to share. But it just gives us a way to connect as a classroom community on a daily basis.
You know, and I think that as a parent, we all know that if we give our kids a little bit of time in the morning, they can kind of get in and settle in and get ready. But there is just this daily race against time.
Right.
And I myself, as I'm listening to you, I'm like, oh no, we have not been setting up our kids for the day by, you know, kind of running in at the last minute, mm-hmm. and making it by the bell. Are there things that you suggest that could alleviate some of that issues? And
yeah, I mean, I know it's hard. I'm a morning person, so I'm actually very lucky that way. Mm-hmm. But I know for families where both parents and kids are more nocturnal and more of a night owl, it is a daily struggle. Mm-hmm. I would say maybe if even just setting the alarm maybe 10 minutes earlier. Mm-hmm. Or maybe packing a snack the night before into the backpack so that kids can just maybe be a little bit more efficient in the morning and then not have to worry about some of the last minute things they can take care of the night before and then put their backpack in the car and then get going that way. But I think just even a difference of 10 minutes coming in at, say, 8:35 rather than 8:47 when we're already settled in, I think really helps the kids come into just a more settled way. Plus, it really is helpful for them to connect with their peers socially. Because if they come in and morning circle has started already, morning meeting has started already, the first thing they want to do is connect with their friends, which makes sense. But that's not necessarily where some of their friends are at already, because maybe their friends have come in a little bit earlier and they've had that chance to catch up. So I think it also helps that child feel connected, not just with the class, but with their peers.
Hmm.
So I think just a few minutes here and there can really make a difference.
Yeah, the connection with friends and then just connection in general.
Connection really in general is really important.
Learning.
Really, really important. Yeah.
What are some things you do in the classroom to really help facilitate that connection, either with the peers or with you and them, and all and connection to the subject matter?
I agree. Connection is extremely important. And I really believe in the routines and the relationships and the structure. So many of our kids, when they first come in, even before the gong has gone off, they peer into through the door to see what the structure of the day is. And then they see if they can read morning message from far away. And knowing that helps them to calm down. And also, when we have communication with families, one of the things that we do is we always tell students that we're going to be communicating with their families. And that could be something that's very politically not worthy that we want to share with families, or an area of challenge. Mm-hmm. But we don't want any surprises. Mm-hmm. So if something has been an area of struggle, we ask the child to help us draft the email. And we can use their words completely, or if they don't want to, then we always read the email to them beforehand. Mm-hmm. So that opens up that three-way conversation so that parents and teachers are always on the same page, or as much on the same page as possible. It really helps to reinforce the messages. It really helps to reinforce the language. So, for example, if a child needs a break, mm-hmm. the language that we use is, take a break, go get a drink of water, take a break. And that way, if families are experiencing something similar where an engine needs to come down, if again they're using that same language, take a break, then the child has made that connection between home and school and understands that parents and teachers are on the same page and that we both have the child's best interest at heart. Mm-hmm. So that's really, really, really important. Connecting with something just as simple as, how was your night last night? Or we've gotten emails from parents saying, my child came home when they were really excited to talk about the inference of a story that you read. Or we heard something about density and fresh water and salt water. What was that all about? So by responding to that, then we share information with parents, but then we check in the morning with, hey, I heard you had this great discussion with your family last night about whatever the topic was. And then that again reinforces the connection that we're all on the same page. And that I have found over the years that that's really, really helpful. Mm. At the same time, just checking in with a parent. Mm-hmm. You know, I know you were a little bit concerned about something. Just wanted to tell, you know, check in, see how things were going. Did you hear anything else at home that we should be aware of? Or just saying something, just sharing a fun story. Maybe a child had been a little bit concerned about their reading or their math, and then sharing that a child came in and asked to read a book, or a child came in and asked to work on their math folder, to help, to give a follow-up. Mm-hmm. That it just wasn't an isolated event, but it's a continuum, and learning is a continuum. And it's a continuum not just for students, but actually also for teachers and parents. Mm-hmm. Because we're lifelong learners.
Yeah.
And so we learn every day from the experiences of our own children, whether those are students or our own children. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and we say that to the kids. We say, you know what? We make mistakes all the time, and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So connections, making them feel connected to the school environment, mm-hmm. but also connecting the school environment to the home environment.
To the home environment.
So that's all the fluid process of
right.
learning for them.
Right.
And I'm a strong believer in routines too. Mm-hmm. And in it's definitely something that really supports the whole family.
Right.
And but in terms of things that more long term, in terms of lifelong learning, mm-hmm. what are some things that you would recommend parents do with their kids at home or on vacation to really?
So I think it's a great question. I think one thing that's really, really important, and we've talked a lot about with our students, is resiliency, mm-hmm. and the idea that we all have choices. Mm-hmm. And if a topic is difficult, mm-hmm. whether if you just start academically, if a child is struggling a little bit with a writing assignment or with a math concept, that it's okay to continue to try. Mm-hmm. And if you've worked for 30 seconds, it's okay to work for another couple of minutes. Mm-hmm. And that those are life skills mm-hmm. that really need, in many cases, really need to be reinforced over and over again. Mm-hmm. In the age of instant gratification, where you can look something up on the computer or you can click a button and you can make a purchase, I think it's hard for our kids. It's not something that many of us grew up with. Yeah. And so really to instill in them that they have a choice, that they have a choice that, to continue to work on that problem. Mm-hmm. And teachers are always available to help. Mm-hmm. But it's really important that they try mm-hmm. and to really deeply understand the benefits that come from trying. That's how you develop self-confidence. Mm-hmm. That's how you develop an understanding of where your skills are. And again, it's true academically, but it's also really true socially and emotionally. Mm-hmm. It's really important emotionally to know that you've tried, mm-hmm. to know whether it's collaborating with the team. That they may not be your favorite people, mm-hmm. but that's okay because your teams will not always be your favorite people. And we need to try. It doesn't mean that there are not some mixes that aren't the best, but trying to find the positive in the situation and trying to tap into each other's skills and to look for the good in a situation rather than looking for the negative. Mm-hmm. But I really think of all of those as resiliency skills. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that we talk about them enough. But I think those are lifelong skills, whether that's when you're 5 years old or you're however old you are, we need that every single day. Mm-hmm. And to not just give up and throw our hands up and say it's impossible, it's probably not impossible. It might be difficult, but then go back and look at it. I mean, we had a wonderful example in the first trimester with a student who had never written much before. And he wrote throughout the trimester, and right before portfolio day, we showed the kids their journals, and he said, "Wow, I can't believe how much I've written." And it was such a moment of pride for him. It was so awesome. He hadn't realized it, but if he hadn't pushed himself and if he hadn't been encouraged, then he wouldn't have had that proud moment of, "Wow, I can really do this."
Mm, yeah.
So it's again, it might be difficult at the moment, but think of how awesome you're going to feel afterwards when it's done and you said, "I did it."
Yeah, that's a great feeling. And that's a feeling that they can draw upon
whenever
future challenges come up again. And
right.
So I know that you have two girls, so mm-hmm. you're a mom as well. And as a mom, as they were growing up, now one is in college and two are both in college, that's right. What were some things that you did as a parent to really build a sense of resilience? Because I know that your girls are doing very well. They're thriving. They're
so far we're lucky.
So what were some things that you was top priority for you in nurturing them to be resilient and strong women?
So we try to, first of all, thank you for saying that. I think my husband and I are very fortunate. I think we're really very lucky. Mm-hmm. Up until now, at least. We tried to give them, even from a very young age, we tried to set up areas where they were given choice in areas that were safe. So I remember when my older daughter was very little, we let her choose her own clothes. So we bought the clothes for her, but if she wanted to wear stripes on the top and circles on the bottom, that was okay because it gave her the opportunity to make a choice and a decision in a way that was not going to harm anyone, including herself. So we tried to give them some choice in areas that were safe. We also really were very consistent with boundaries. So we really tried to not back ourselves into a no, no, no position and then have to retract on that. So if, for example, we didn't say you're not ever going to school again or things like that because that just was not the situation. So we really made sure to try. I can't say we always succeeded, but to try to not give empty threats, but to give measured responses in ways that were doable. So if somebody, if somebody didn't want to do something, then the natural consequence was, well, then I guess we won't be going out to dinner as a family, whatever it was, and then really sticking with it. It really only takes two or three of those examples for them to realize that they're not empty threats. And we really tried to get ourselves into situations where the kids would feel empowered, but also where they knew that certain things were negotiable and certain things were not. Mm-hmm. And we gave them opportunity, I think, from a fairly young age. You know, for better or for worse, my kids started doing their laundry when they were really little. I think like fourth, fifth grade. They started making their lunches when they were little. One piece of advice that my kids' kindergarten teacher gave us that I really held close was, if you're driving to school, let your child carry their own backpack mm-hmm. from the car to their cubby. Mm-hmm. They're capable of doing that. It's a very simple thing, but it also gives them the sense of responsibility that this is their material. They need to take care of it. And then my kid's first grade teacher actually went one step further and said, let them pack their own snack. So what she meant by that was not necessarily let them pick the item, but let them, there are so many pockets in those backpacks, let them put it in so that they know where it is. So those are little things that we did, and we felt that little steps like that were more productive for us as a family than setting sights that were so unreasonable that no one was going to feel success. So we tried to do smaller things on a consistent basis, and consistency was very important. Bedtime was consistent. Family routines were consistent. And I think we were very fortunate to spend a lot of time together as a family and to try not to judge. So if, you know, one of our girls came home and they had a hard day, to just listen, to listen with empathy, and then provide counsel if counsel was wanted. Sometimes it was just an ear that was wanted. And what's great is that they still call us. They still call us with, do you have a few minutes? Everything's okay. I just want to talk. And that's actually really nice.
Great. How about homework? I know that this is a hot topic for a lot of parents. how to deal with homework in a way that is, I think it's the balancing it's difficult for parents. Like, you want to be involved, you want to check in, but you don't want to be suffocating. You want to give them their space so that it is their responsibility to get the homework done, get it back to school. But some parents feel that if they're not on top of their kids' homework, it might not happen. Yeah. And so it's a delicate balance that parents, it's tricky for a lot of parents.
So I will say in level two, we don't give official homework.
Right. But so, for your girls, as a parent, I guess from both perspectives, as a parent and as a teacher, it'd be interesting to hear from you.
So as a parent, although this goes back away because they're in college now, and even in middle school, they were very autonomous. But I do remember with my older daughter, she was not interested in doing homework. And so a friend suggested actually that we set a timer. Mm-hmm. So we got home from school at 3:30. She set the timer to mm-hmm. see how much she was very tired, to see when she wanted to start her homework. And homework really was not very long. Mm-hmm. But if she wanted a half an hour break, then she set the timer for half an hour. So again, gave her some choice of, she didn't need to do it when she got home, but if she wanted to do it later, she could do that. So we gave her a timer, and then she would decide. Typically, it was within a half an hour of when she would start, and that helped her to feel more empowered. And what we started noticing over the weeks was that although she had set the timer for half an hour, the time was actually growing shorter and shorter. Mm. So she would come home, and she'd say, okay, I want a snack, and then within 10 minutes, she'd usually say, okay, I'm ready to start now. Because she knew that the longer she postponed it, then the longer it would last into the evening, and she couldn't go outside and play with her friends, or couldn't read a book, or we couldn't go out and do something. So that helped a lot to give her some choice about that. And then she actually just kind of embraced it on her own, knowing that it had to get done, and it was just easier to do it and not fight about it, because there wasn't a choice. Mm-hmm. In terms of as a teacher, we in level two don't give official homework. But we do have green folders. Mm-hmm. And green folders is really just the starting point for homework. It was really started really is like a three-pronged approach. One of the purposes was just to encourage literacy at home, and literacy can take the form of reading to your child reading to you, journaling, but really emphasizing the importance of daily literacy practice, because it's not something that's going to happen just by reading at school. So that was one of the intentions. And the other intention was to send home some math work, because it's important for parents to know what kind of skills we're working on. And it was not, the intent was not check in, correct everything and send it back. It was meant just as a dialogue. Oh, I see that you're working on multiplication. Now tell me what strategies you used. And we've gotten feedback from families that the kids come home with that, and then they try to teach their parents using the material that, we used in class. So that opens up, again, the communication and the dialogue. And then really, honestly, was also as a step, as a launching off point to level three. Mm-hmm. Because we give the folders out on Thursday, we ask for them back on Monday. Most of the time we have most of them back by Thursday. But really, it's there is no major consequence for not having it. Mm-hmm. And what we were hearing early on was my mom forgot to pack it. And so we'd say to the kids, but it's not your mom. It doesn't say your mom's green folder. It says your green folder. Mm-hmm. And so that really, again, after a couple of months, you really see that the kids are way more responsible about bringing them back. And there's a set place where they put them. But again, it's trying to take that responsibility and that initiative that it's theirs in a way that is not in any way, there's no major downside at all, but it instills in them a beginning sense of responsibility. Mm-hmm. Plus, it opens up the dialogue for what kind of reading kids are doing at home. It gives us a conversation piece. Oh, I saw that you were reading to your little sister. Tell me about that. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, also just helps to keep the communication open with some of what's going on in math.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So you have been here for, is this your 7th year?
7 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Long time.
Long time. And what have you learned in being here at Synapse? And it is an emotional intelligence school. And what does that mean when it comes to teaching kids? Mm-hmm. And what have you learned that you like to share about being here?
When I first got to Synapse, one of the things that I was really impressed with was just the language. Mm-hmm. Because I reflected a lot and still do. I'm not sure the skills are necessarily that different than what many of us were practicing before, but I really love the non-judgmental language. Mm-hmm. I loved the fact that we could use language with both students and with each other that was meant to just point things out, not meant to be a harsh critic of anybody. So I really liked that language. So for example, we use the term choice a lot. You have a choice. By backing out of something, you're actually ceding control of that situation to somebody else, and you're making a choice to do that. So we found that that kind of language was very empowering to people, to kids, and also to teachers. It also really had a deeper understanding of just where the kids can take information. So what's really great at Synapse now is that I really feel like we've achieved a really awesome balance of some skills that the kids have to know. They just have to know them, mm-hmm. whether those are reading, writing, math, critical thinking skills. We really approach science and social studies not from a fact standpoint so much as a critical thinking, whether we're using analysis or whether we're comparing and contrasting, whether we're inferring information. So we look at it as much more as a vehicle to promote thinking skills, not just as a memorization. That doesn't necessarily exist, I think, in other places. And we also have the freedom to let kids explore some areas that are really exciting to them.
Contact us at 6seconds.org. That's 6 seconds with a 6. And thanks for listening.